I think we got plenty of voice there. Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Colleagues.
There may be interference at the witness table. If a piece of equipment
Elizabeth,
is too close to a microphone.
Elizabeth, can you move those?
Is there
sure.
Second? I thought it was Star Wars and the droids. These aren't the droids you're looking for. It's the wrong committee, isn't it? Hey, great. Look at that. We're a little bit better now.
A little bit.
Great. Thank you, colleagues, members of the public that are here. We've got a very fairly short agenda today. We are going to have SCR 15, then SB 820. We have a work session scheduled for SB 598. However, there is no fiscal for it at this time. Hopefully it will come, and if not, and there's a block, then we'll invite the agency that's having a problem to come back and visit with us. Before we move on, Madam Vice Chair?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always like to start our Veterans Committee with portraits of women combat veterans, and these are actually written by the women who are combat veterans. This was written by Sergeant Catherine Broom, and she is, I think, still in the Virginia Army National Guard. We were in Kuwait for about 12 hours, and then we got onto a C-130 and flew straight into Al Asad. The C-130 did a combat landing. They want to stay out of range of the anti-aircraft missiles, so they stay as high as they can for as long as you can, and then fire roll down at a rapid rate, corkscrewing down into the landing pad. When we woke up the next morning, we were in the middle of a sandstorm, so the world was orange. One of our executive officers came up to us and said, welcome to Mars. Just stepping outside, you would become covered in sand. The water smelled. You couldn't open your eyes or your mouth when you took a shower. Yeah, it was Mars. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And that's on a good day.
That's on a good day?
I've been there.
Okay. No.
119 in the shade.
On a good day. So,
with that, we're going to open a public hearing on SCR 15. Doc, if you want to start coming up. Madam Counsel, if you'd prep us.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, SCR 15 honors pilots and volunteers with the Oregon Wing of Angel Flight West.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. I'm a senator from District 17, Northwest Portland, unincorporated Washington County, a little bit of Beaverton. And in my other life, I'm a family physician. And it was in this capacity that I became aware of the really amazing work that the volunteers of Angel Flight West do for our state and people in our state. I was at our state's annual meeting back a little over a year ago, and I saw that the Angel Flight West people were a bunch of volunteer pilots who got together and offered their services free of charge to Oregonians who needed to get from their rural communities into more urban communities, either for medical care or to visit sick relatives. And it's very tough. You know, we live in a really big state, and we have people who, and our medical care is really focused in one particular, to a couple of particular areas of the state. And it's really important for people to have access to this care no matter where they live. But it's expensive and time-consuming to get from Hardy County to Portland or even to Bend sometimes. And these volunteers give of their time and their physical and personal resources to transport people across the state to get them to where they need to be so that they can receive the medical care they need. I'm going to let them speak for themselves because they do it much more eloquently than I, but I think it's really important that we recognize as a body the important contribution that people in Angel Flight West give to our state and really thank them for the work that they've done. And as much as I'd love to stay and watch their video, I've seen it and I have to go be in my own committee. So if you have questions for me, I'd be delighted to offer them answer them. Otherwise, I'll take my leave.
Madam Vice Chair, questions? Senator Olson?
I'm only a teaser, no.
No, you're not. You may take your leave, Doctor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair, and you know you're going to enjoy watching their video as much as I have in the past.
I appreciate Raul, Rosemary, Joseph. You want to come on up? There's three chairs there. Don't be bashful. We're going to see and I guess we're going to let ladies go first.
Chairman Boquist, committee members, I am Rosemary Pellicer, a resident of Hillsboro, and I'm the wing leader of the Oregon Wing of Angel Flight West. I am here today in support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 15. I would like to start by thanking the chief sponsors of the resolution, Senator Steiner Haywood, Senator Johnson, and Representative Smith, as well as all the additional sponsors for proposing this honor for the pilots and volunteers of the Oregon Wing of Angel Flight West. Today, I will be providing you an overview of Angel Flight West and the service that our pilots and volunteers provide to the citizens of our state. I have two additional members of the wing leadership team present today. Raul Van Landite is the Oregon Wing Hospital and Agency Outreach Coordinator. He will be introducing you to the many non-pilot volunteers that are so critical to the success of the wing. Joe Pellicer is an Oregon Wing Command Pilot and Chief Orientation Pilot. He will be providing information on the Oregon citizens that volunteer to become Oregon Wing Command Pilots, and he will share a personal story of one of the countless families that have been served by the Oregon Wing. Angel Flight West is a nonprofit, volunteer-driven organization that arranges free, non-emergency air travel for children and adults with serious medical conditions and other compelling needs. Our pilots throughout the 13 western states donate their aircraft, piloting skills, and all flying costs to help families in need, enabling them to receive vital treatment that otherwise might be inaccessible because of financial, medical, or geographic limitations. Our pilots give freely of their time and money, restoring health and hope to those whose lives have been disrupted by illness, disaster, and other life-altering events. The Oregon Wing membership consists of approximately 70 pilots and 27 additional non-flying volunteers. The wing flew 216 missions in 2012. In addition, through our Earth Angel partnership with the Oregon Lions Club, we were able to provide 65 connecting ground transports. We fly a wide variety of missions. Some include transportation of health care appointments such as chemotherapy, pre- and post-operative consultations, pre- and post-organ transplant care, transportation of family members of patients in hospitals, transportation of military personnel to the VA hospital and back home from deployments. We've also transported kids to special needs camps, including diabetes, burns, and HIV. We've also relocated victims of domestic violence. We've done time-critical tissue transportation, including eye tissue, blood, and rural blood drives. And we've done transportation of service animals. Our passengers are never charged for the services we provide. The Oregon Wing Command Pilots provide all of the aircraft in support of our mission and cover all flying costs. Last year, the Oregon Wing received a special honor, the OHSU Oregon Rural Health Award, awarded us a 2012 Hero of the Year Award. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to show a short video produced by the Office of Rural Health highlighting the work of the Oregon Wing. I have included the link in this video to my written testimony, and this is a quick 4-minute video.
Thank you.
I got into aviation just as a fluke. Introductory flight.
He wants.
It wasn't anything I'd ever thought of in the past, but when I first did it, I was like,
technology.
Dr. 48 years of service, the journey was on. And our journey at that time was how can people be flight came into our lives, unfortunately, when my husband was.
What do we ask for somebody to get physical care?
Patient navigator with my youngest son.
Several years ago, I learned about Angel Flight West. You know, that seems like a good way to have a good people flying. We signed up, and my wife and I have been flying all of the missions together, and we just completed our 100th mission this year.
Anybody else know what you see?
Angel Flight West is a nonprofit organization that arranges free air travel for children and adults with serious medical conditions.
That's too bad.
They live in rural and remote areas, and they are unable to reach their appointments.
With Angel Flight West, we're able to bring passengers over in the morning. They have their appointment, and then we can return them home that evening. It provides them a lot of things that the airlines can't. You know, obviously, we don't have the hassles with security. We're not dealing with crowds.
I was diagnosed in 2005 with multiple sclerosis. My mother was reading an article about Angel Flights, and she sent it to me, so I called. I flew nearly every month for the last 5.5 years to Portland and then back again.
The types of missions we fly include transporting cancer patients to chemotherapy, could be to surgeries. We also transport children to special needs camps. Our Angel Flight West missions are flown by pilots that donate their aircraft, their time, and all the flying costs.
They became almost like extended family. They were a lifeline to a solution of time, which is the biggest thing they gave. Is time, their time to us, which gave him more time.
There are over 100 airports in Oregon. Only a small handful are served by commercial aviation. So with the aircraft that are employed by Angel Flight West, we can service passengers anywhere in Oregon through any airport in Oregon.
The pilots are always really accommodating. One time, one of my pilots, his plane got grounded, and he offered to drive me home. I had another one where they actually bought me a ticket on a commercial flight to go home. So they're my heroes. They really, really are.
They did everything to make us happy, to accommodate what we had to do. So no matter what I asked for, they would manage that. Phil could not have done what he did without them.
We have approximately 70 pilots in the Oregon wing, and this year we are flying close to 200 missions. We are rewarded with the fact that we actually get to meet the people that we are helping.
You know, and you see people like that, that you know, are facing adversity in their life, and yet they have such a positive outlook. It really brings you home, and you never have a bad day after that. I'd like to encourage pilots out there that if you're looking for a wonderful way to use your skills and to give back to the community, Angel Flight West is an amazing opportunity. Feel free to give us a call. We'd love to talk to you.
My time with Phil and Angel Flight allowed me to get ready to say goodbye. Had he died in those few months, I never would have had a chance to do that. There was hope, there was sadness, there was all the things that are in life. Those 2 years, the extra years he got, they were a whole lifetime.
It has been a great personal honor to be the leader of the Oregon Wing. Our command pilots and volunteers represent the best in the citizens of our state. On behalf of the Oregon Wing, I thank you for your consideration of this resolution and for the opportunity to testify before you today. Mr. Chairman, in the interest of making the best use of the committee's time, I would like to suggest that we hold questions until the end of Raoul Van Landyte's and Joe Pelissier's testimony.
Chairman Boquist and Vice Chair Anderson, I am Raul Van Landite. I'm a resident of Kaiser, and I'm the hospital and agency outreach coordinator for the wing. I've been a non-pilot member since May of 2010. As Rosemary mentioned, I'm here to talk about the non-pilot volunteers in the wing. One of our largest non-flying activities is outreach. Our main focus is to inform social workers, case managers, and hospital personnel about what we do. In 2012, we had 14 volunteers who visited 22 hospitals and clinics and 14 social service agencies across Oregon. Not all hospitals in Portland were visited, but we managed to touch 13 Oregon counties with our outreach activity. Additionally, we hosted an information exhibit at three conferences. You heard the doctor refer to the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians, where she met me, the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic Violence conference, as well as the Northwest Portland Indian Health Board. Our public relations volunteer informs us that the Oregon Wing received positive media coverage in several news locations around Oregon. Throughout 2012, Rosemary was assisted by two area leaders, one for Central Oregon in Bend and one for Eastern Oregon in Baker City. Those two people assist Rosemary to meet the needs of those regions. We also have a key, very key, non-pilot volunteer who coordinates and expedites Oregon Wing pilots. Pilots and non-pilots together work to improve the lives of Oregonians across the state by providing the transportation they need to address health care and other urgent needs. I join Rosemary and Joe in thanking you for considering this resolution and for having us speak to you today.
Chairman Boquist, committee members, I'm Joe Pellissier. I'm a command pilot and the chief orientation pilot for Angel Flight West at the Oregon Wing. And like Rosemary and Raul, I'm here in support of Concurrent Resolution 15. I'm pleased to be able to speak to you today about the Oregon citizens that actually volunteer to fly for the Oregon Wing of Angel Flight West. As Rosemary stated, we have approximately 70 command pilots in the Oregon Wing. So what exactly is a command pilot? Well, a command pilot is an FAA-certified pilot, of course, that meets the experience criteria set forth by Angel Flight West to command Angel Flight missions. These folks are, we have a program where we verify their qualifications, and then we have an orientation program that we make sure that they are ready and able to follow the Angel Flight procedures and to fly missions for Angel Flight. Our command pilots are representative of the entire cross-section of Oregon citizens. We have one gentleman that's a successful internet entrepreneur. We have a Mennonite grass seed farmer that flies for Angel Flight. We have several small business people and every other imaginable occupation. These are the types of folks that volunteer for Angel Flight. Some are able to fly dozens of missions every year. Others save their money, and this is their one way of giving back for the year. They'll save their money and they'll do one mission for the year. Either way, it makes a big impact to the citizens of our state. The aircraft that we employ are all, of course, FAA-certified aircraft, and they range from simple 2- and 4-seat single-engine piston aircraft all the way up to small jet aircraft. But despite the diversity of the command pilots in the Oregon Wing, the one thing they all have in common is a driving desire to use their unique skills in order to help the citizens of our state. In addition to flying the missions, we have a few of our command pilots that have volunteered to assist the Oregon Wings in other ways. We have what are called mission orientation pilots, which are the pilots that brief the new volunteers on the Angel Flight procedures and safety procedures and how to conduct the mission. And we also are fortunate to have a number of pilots that have volunteered as mentor pilots that help our new pilots get their first mission and help them through all the process the first time through. I've personally been a command pilot for Angel Flight West, and I've flown over 100 Angel Flight missions in the last 4 or so years that I've been a command pilot. And there are just amazing stories I could tell you. But in the interest of time, I'd like to tell you about one story of one amazing family in Oregon. This is the Bingham family. They live in Baker City. And in the summer of 2006, Stacy and Jason Bingham received the news that their 6-year-old daughter had experienced congestive heart failure. This was here. She was rushed to Stanford Hospital in California, where she was placed on waiting list for a heart transplant as her heart rapidly deteriorated. Fortunately, a heart became available, and a new heart was donated, and the transplant was successful. And I believe she's about 12 now, and she's been doing well since that transport, since the transplant. But what has happened is over those intervening years, of course, there are multiple visits back to Stanford Hospital every time she catches a cold or anything. That can be a life-threatening event when you're immunosuppressed. So Angel Flight has been there to make sure that they receive the transportation they need to get back to Stanford University Hospital. One of the flights that I conducted, Jason Bingham relayed to me that had it not been Angel Flight, his transportation costs, which are not covered by insurance, would have been over $250,000. This would have financially ruined the family. So at this point, it seems like we should have a happy ending. Unfortunately, in May of 2012, the Bingham's third child, Lindsay, at the age of 8, was diagnosed with the same disease. Her heart eventually failed, and she was placed on a mechanical pump. And after 240 days on the mechanical pump, she... at 7:16 a.m. on Valentine's Day, she received a heart transplant. Again, the transplant was successful, and she's doing well. Again, we wish the story would have a happy ending, but as part of the testing that was performed for Lindsay, they discovered that all five of the Bingham's children are going to require transplants. As I was saying, this is just one of the amazing people we get to meet, one amazing family. And I'm proud that Angel Flight is here to help them. And again, I join Rosemary and Raul, and thank you for your consideration in this resolution.
Thank you. Vice Chair, question?
Oh, just thank you for coming and sharing the stories, too. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
You probably need more people.
We can always use more volunteers, absolutely. That's one of our big efforts is to recruiting both pilots and non-pilots, and as Raul stated, letting folks know that the service is available. That's actually a bit of a challenge.
We thank you for your service. Senator Olson? Senator Courtney?
We appreciate very much your testimony. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on SCR 15? I don't see anybody jumping up and moving around. Again, we appreciate your testimony. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on SCR 15. We may come back to this in this session because we are winding down the Senate bills. I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on SB 820. Madam Counsel, if you would please, and General Caldwell, Mr. Sansui, and Bridget Burns, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 820 requires public universities and community colleges to charge in-state tuition for all honorably discharged veterans regardless of residency. It declares an emergency. It's effective on passage. This measure has an indeterminate fiscal, no revenue impact, and a subsequent referral to another policy committee, the Education and Workforce Development Committee.
Well, we generally allow ladies to go first, but I think you're going to probably talk about the fiscal. So if you want to defer to one of these two men, you may.
They both seem to be great.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. For the record, my name is Mark Sansusi, the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families for the Northwest. I'm here to express Department of Defense support for Senate Bill 820 for in-state tuition for our new veterans. And last week I listened to the video when you introduced this bill, and I really think that Senator Olson put it best when he said that a service member in Afghanistan is fighting for all the states, not just one state. So we appreciate so far the introduction of this bill. As of last month, the state of Virginia enacted legislation resembling Senate Bill 820, becoming the 20th state to offer new veterans receiving the post-9/11 GI Bill in-state tuition rates in that first year. Also, we have 15 other states right now considering the same legislation nationwide. The 20 states that have done this have recognized that waiving the time to establish in-state rates for tuition purposes benefits their state. These 20 states know that they can attract new veterans based on suitability of degree requirements in the superb schools you have here in Oregon, and not necessarily on the affordability with the GI Bill paying only the in-state rates in the first year. We also know that businesses need as many more highly skilled people from certificates to graduate degrees as can be produced. School officials I talk to, I live up in Washington and work with the Washington Prior Learning Assessment group up there with the academics in all the schools up there. The ones I talk to up there like veterans because they come with the GI Bill funding. It's like a four-year federally funded scholarship. Veterans have a work ethic and leadership elements other students find to be positive and congenial. And this generation of veterans that this bill targets, and this is the first year the Department of Defense has this as one of our 10 key issues, and I've been before you on other ones in the past. The generation of vets this targets includes almost all of whom have done multiple combat tours in Iraq or Afghanistan. They are that 1% of our young people serving our nation, and we think we need to incorporate them deeply into our communities. And to try and wrap up here, what we're seeking here is that new veterans have the opportunity to compete for in-state tuition slots, as opposed to an institution giving up an out-of-state admission for such purposes. Veterans are not necessarily guaranteed admission, but they would have to compete for entrance like anyone else. And I note that so far, in Senate Bill 820 doesn't have a fiscal note. I know there are fiscal notes floating around, and there's a House version of this bill. And I just would like to say that if this bill were enacted and became law as it is, this fiscal notes that I've heard about are kind of like zero sum. The idea is that if this veteran is paying the in-state rate in the first year, that somehow that's lost money, while other people in competition will be taking those out-of-state slots and paying. So we would argue that the zero sum fiscal note is kind of we would dispute that. Others will take those out-of-state slots, and actually you can actually maybe make more money by attracting veterans to the universities in Oregon, knowing that they're going to pay the in-state rates. So with that, I appreciate your past support for other things you've done here in the last few years for us, and thank you, and I stand for any questions.
General, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department. We support this Senate Bill 820. I think Mr. Sanssouci has done a good job of detailing the intricate parts of it. I would just emphasize again that the competition is there to get a slot to get into any of the universities as it is. Community colleges have a lesser requirement for residency right now, so there is a good flux of increase in that regard. I would tell you from our experience, from the National Guard side, where our folks are using their GI benefits, the community colleges far exceed the entrance than the universities do. And I don't know what that's from, other than maybe that's an easier mark for them, or easier to get in, or what the case may be. But I think Mark's made every point that I would want to make, so I won't reiterate it. And I'm sure that Bridget will give you some really good hard facts. So we'll let her take it from there.
And gentlemen, I think she's going to prove you wrong, but that's okay. If you would.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. What I wanted to do was just walk you through some of the practical application of this legislation and how it would actually work for us. I've had a great conversation with Senator Olson, and I believe that we align on a lot of these issues. We think the intentions of this bill are noble, and we have a lot of current programs that we do, like the Yellow Ribbon Program, the Veterans Dependent Tuition Waiver, and a multitude of other programs that we do specifically for veterans, and we think we should consistently be finding more things to do for them because we know this is a population that is underserved. The challenge for us is that there is actually a fiscal impact on this, and I want to explain to you how that would be triggered. And I want to offer that my support, we've been working right now with Representative Matthews on House Bill 2158, and I believe they're about to adopt the -7 amendments, which would make that bill not have a fiscal impact. And what that bill does is actually almost word for word what tuition equity does, but for veterans, except for it also adds on some additional benefits for graduate veterans from out of state. So we support that legislation just as much as we support this one. However, the difference is that bill has no fiscal impact, and this one would actually cost something. Here's how it would cost something. We don't actually charge out-of-state tuition to non-resident veterans. We charge a non-resident veteran rate. It is actually halfway between veterans, the normal out-of-state tuition and in-state tuition. If at the University of Oregon, in-state tuition is about $8,000 per year, out-of-state's about $25,000 per year, $24,000, $25,000, depends on the program. And what we do with that money is we use that income. First, it covers the entire cost of educating that student because we don't get any supplement from the state. And then it also helps us to support Oregonians to attend that institution. Non-residents are a tremendous source of revenue for us, as we've consistently seen over time, not as much support financially for the number of Oregonians that we have. So it's merely something that's been adopted nationwide. It's a policy. But what we do is we charge about $16,000 for non-resident veterans. And what that covers is exactly the cost of their education. We don't make money off of veterans. What we do is, if we're not going to get any money from the state to support them because they weren't an Oregonian and the state's not going to financially support them, we have to find the money somewhere. And the way we do it is by charging them exactly that cost. If you were to enact this legislation today, the financial impact is we currently are serving 193 non-resident veterans. They are paying that adjusted $16,000 versus $8,000. So if you look over a biennium, the amount is about $1.5 million. And that's where you see the impact. So we would be happy to work with Senator Olson or others to try and find additional resources to support these students. But otherwise, what we're looking at is we have to balance the books. And if we're not going to get support somewhere, that's the only place that we're kind of at a crossroads on that. We believe in the intentions of this legislation, and we're happy to work with the committee as much as possible on this, but we're kind of in a tough spot because based on the non-resident rules, unless they've lived here for a year, they can't be eligible for in-state tuition. And another thing I would add is if you move specifically to go to an Oregon public university, then you also, waiting around for 1 year won't solve the problem, because if you came here for our institutions, you have to pay the price that you intended to pay based on the out-of-state rate that was advertised. What we would tell you is that each of these students is eligible to receive in-state tuition rates at their home state. So we're happy to work with the committee in any way possible. I just wanted to give you some brief facts about how this will impact us, and we appreciate the opportunity to discuss this population that we believe is underserved and we would like to do more for. Happy to answer any questions.
I do have one. Have you seen the fiscal from LFO?
I have not, Chair Boquist.
Okay. We'll go to other questions, then I'll come back to that. Other questions, committee members?
I do have one, sir.
Go ahead.
We talked about this. We've gone over this. You know, I have a really, really, really big soft spot in my heart for veterans. You understand the fact that these veterans have taken time out of their life to defend and protect our country. Our country, not just our state, our country. The time that they spend on tour, on duty, in war zones, possibility of getting killed, many come back injured. The general probably could tell me the numbers that have come back injured. We have 330,000 veterans in our state, 7,700 approximately are 100% disabled. These people don't do it and take this lightly. What they say is, we are going to serve our country. I think it's about time our country paid them back. And a $1.5 million fiscal, to me, is a mere pittance to what we owe these gentlemen and ladies in the service, including those from the Vietnam era who came back, and I used the GI Bill. It was very small. But the fact is that 20 states now have said that this is a good program. The federal government has issued a bill potentially could pass through and provide in-state tuition for any veteran in any state in America. I think Oregon needs to get on the bandwagon and say, we support these folks.
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, we are supportive of the intentions, as you and I have discussed. The only thing I would follow up with is, after our conversation, and also after our conversation with Representative Parrish, it seemed important for us to do some more research on this and talk to those states that have done this. So we reached out to the states that have adopted similar legislation, and we've asked them, how did you financially support it? How did the wording work, et cetera? The only state that's gotten back to us has been Utah, and they actually don't do this. It's perceived that they have a policy that gives non-resident veterans in-state tuition, but they don't. It's if you are based on a base in the state currently that they will allow you to pay that rate, but they don't actually have a general waiver. So I would say that we need to probably spend a little bit more time, and we're hoping that more states will get back to us and let us know how we can implement this. Are there other resources available so we can provide better support? I would just add that it seems to be a little bit more complicated, and that's why we believe that House Bill 2158 is at least a moderate step in the right direction, because it does provide additional benefits, and it also makes it easier for non-resident veterans who want to go to graduate school.
Well, the difference between the two bills is first off, House Bill 2158 says that if you are other than dishonorably discharged, mine says you need to be honorably discharged to start with, which is very important in the life of the military. Number two, I'd like to put this into the record. I think I did it at last testimony, but I'd like to do it again. And this is from the state of Ohio that did this in 2008, 5 years ago. This is a great benefit for veterans as well as for Ohio. And this was said by Governor Ted Strickland at the time. It delivers real support to veterans while helping strengthen Ohio's strategic plan for higher education. We have that, 40-40-20, which calls for attracting and keeping talent in the state. Who better to have as part of Ohio's colleges and universities, workforce and communities than the veterans who have served, led, and protected our country? That's from the governor of the state of Ohio. I think our governor would probably say the same thing. I think there's a way to find the $1.5 million if it's actually there, but I think we need to do this bill. I think personally this is a better bill than the one you're talking about, and I think this bill should get done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Senator Olson, any other questions? Okay, is there anyone else in the audience that wants to address SB 820? I don't see anybody jumping up. For the record, and colleagues, we're going to break here momentarily to check our paperwork, because again, we only have two more meetings after this, so we have to check our paperwork here, so we're going to take a short break in a minute. But for the record, legislative fiscal, and I'm going to take a break and let somebody look at this in a minute, says the overall fiscal effect of this bill is indeterminate, and it further says, for the record, the Oregon State University system estimates that the bill would be fiscal and revenue neutral at worst, but more likely be revenue positive. That's the same we saw in a related one. And with that, colleagues, I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 820, ask the committee to stand at ease just momentarily.
back on the record, if you would, please. Colleagues, SB 598, we're still waiting for a response from Legislative Fiscal Office, so it's going to have to be carried over, and the calendar will have to be changed to reflect that to next week. Just out of courtesy, I'm looking out in the environment out there. Is there anybody that needs to put something on the record, though, for 598? I don't see anybody jumping up, so we won't do that. Colleagues, we're going to go ahead and open a work session on SCR 15 since we are on a timeline. Madam Counsel, if you'll refresh us from earlier.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this was the resolution that was just testified to, honoring pilots and volunteers with the Oregon wing of Angel Flight West. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral.
Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, Chair Boquist, I move SCR 15 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SCR 15 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Steyer Hayward, it is the sole chief sponsor, and so we will ask her to carry it. And Senator Johnson will be the alternate because she is the second chief co-sponsor. With that so ordered, and the public work session is closed. Going to open a work session on SB 820. Madam Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the measure that was just discussed requiring public universities and community colleges to charge in-state tuition for all honorably discharged veterans regardless of residency. As was previously discussed, it has a subsequent referral to another policy committee, Education and Workforce Development. The fiscal we have is the indeterminate and it has no revenue impact.
Thank you, Council. Colleagues, this does have a subsequent referral to Education Workforce Development, which will close down at the same time we do. In addition, there seems to be some lack of clarity on the fiscal and why this fiscal says what it does compared to other bills, and some lack of clarity in regards to the bill that might be coming across from the House. But given that we're on timelines, and another committee may be half it, I would entertain the discussion to move it without recommendation over to Education and Workforce Development, and then have Council track down and get back to all the committee members the status of the other bill and the status of, to confirm what the fiscal really is, to make sure it's accurate so that all four members might have an opportunity to present testimony if we did decide to send it over to Education and Workforce Development.
Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 820 to the floor without recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Education and Workforce Development by prior reference.
That's right. Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves SB 820 to the floor without recommendation, and that be referred to the Committee on Education and Workforce Development by prior reference, which is the instructions we have previously. Discussion, Senator Olson.
Yes, since this is the first time this has ever come up before my plate, what does that mean without recommendation?
What it simply means is that because we have a lack of information, that we're sending it over to them, and then the committee can follow up at a later point, or the individuals can follow up at a later point with them. Generally, we do it on tax credit, a lot of tax and revenue issues when it comes out. Again, for the record, LFO has said that it's indeterminate. The university system has said it's not quite indeterminate in testimony, and there's some conflicting. It does match some of those that are out there. I would expect that once we get more information, that the committee members can go back to the chair of Education and Workforce Development.
Testify. So,
there it is. Further discussion? Is there any opposition? No opposition, so ordered. With that, we're going to close the work session on SB 820. Colleagues, again, we don't have any information on SB 598 in terms of the fiscal for it. Council, we have a meeting next week. I would ask you to follow up with Legislative Fiscal in regards to the House bill that is related to 820 and get a copy of that fiscal and provide to all the committee members, and then please re-inquire with LFO for them to ensure back to us that the fiscal they did present to us, which is going with the bill to the committee, is accurate. And with that, colleagues, we're done for the day.
You're going to have trouble with time getting 8